Hello, and welcome to the Story Points Podcast. My name is Roger King.
Wait, no, that's me.
And I'm Joe Misery.
Just kidding, my name is George Marcantonis.
So, working from home has been really tough lately. Even coming out to record this has been a challenge to me. I kind of just want to stay home and either keep working or sit on the couch and watch Netflix.
Yeah. I didn't even know what to do with myself. Was it Friday after work? I was just like, I can just work more, or I can watch YouTube or watch something on the couch. But it's like, yeah. I look forward to just like 5 o'clock, like the next routine thing in my day, right? Like, yeah. I'm in a routine lately for sure.
The routine of not going out, not doing anything, not.
Yeah, kind of. So it's like, you know, you. Even like when we worked in the city, right? It was like you go to the train. Who knows what you could see? You can see some lady taking a shit between two cars.
I miss the train.
Yeah, you don't know what you'll see.
But
you
that's
get a story
like your decompressed time, and then it's like right, build up to go do something else where you don't have.
We're
that
like
when you're
right now, it's like I stop working at 5, and I'm like, oh, you know, I get to go walk the dogs. I'll go walk the dogs, and I get home. I'm like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Wife's working still, like, what do I do?
You have to ramp up back into work.
I can just start cooking, and then it's like, all right, I've done all these things that's in my routine already, scheduled for the day.
Yeah.
It's like, what do I do? Work?
But is that being antisocial, or it's just like, I don't know what to do? Is it like that you don't want to do anything? Because it sounds like for George, you don't feel like talking to people.
Yeah, I mean, my breaks have become like, oh, I'm gonna take a break because I made coffee at 9, had stand up 9:30, I worked for a few hours, it's 12, 1 o'clock, I'm gonna take a break and make lunch. Afterwards, it's like, I'm either gonna take a nap, by some miracle go back to work, or just like watch a movie.
Some miracle, go back to
work.
Or after lunch.
Or watch a movie and take a nap. And at 4 o'clock, wake up, make dinner, and then keep working at night. Because that's normally what happens. I like take a larger break during the day and then end up working at night.
I can see that. Well, also, like if you're at work, there's a lot of distractions.
Yeah.
Just trying to get stuff done.
I mean, you guys remember, like, when we were at Compass, it was go up to 11. You can kind of decompress a little bit, socialize. Yeah. Hey, do you want to go to 11 and work together? There's a lot more social. Even if you're working, there's more social aspects to it.
Yes.
But I think that's part of the problem with working from home for 2 straight years is like you stop doing all of those things. So now it feels like work to be like, all right, let's go and sit down and work together for an hour or like, you know,
that's true.
Do anything that you're not used to doing every day.
Like at Compass, you could throw in a few meetings every morning, and it's like you still kind of have that. I'm in the office. You need to go. This is go time. Boom, have a meeting. Okay, keep working. Okay, go to 11, get your spot for lunch, but then work at the table as fast as possible, and then get lunch, and then keep working, or, you know, go to whatever meeting.
It's like mental breaks.
Yeah. At home, it's kind of like, it's either I'm working or I'm not working. So it's like, do I either talk to people or everyone's dead to me? And I think I'm just like falling in that everyone's dead to me more and more.
That was something that Brian talked to me about, right when working from home became the norm, because like you guys know, I worked from home 2 or 3 times a week as a normal regular schedule for years. Like this is that was like my normal thing, and that's what I always told my employers. But he was like, hey, can you just write some tips on how you kind of separate, you know, your work office life to your home life? And I was like, yeah. And it just seems so normal to me. But I think now, like you said, Joe, 2 years in, I'm just like, I'd never noticed how 2 days in the office just helped a lot.
Yep.
2 or 3 days just helped. Especially to get, like, as much as people have said, oh, Google Meet meetings are great because you could just end the call, no bullshitting around. I'm like, but bullshitting around is like the best part. Yeah. Like that is what I look forward to in every meeting. It's like that bullshit moment where you can just like talk to people.
Well, I feel like, I mean, I don't know if it is for you guys, but whenever I join a meeting and you're like waiting for everybody else to join is always that 2 minute bullshit time.
Yeah.
So having those meetings is almost like that's your interactive part of the day.
Yeah.
Before you actually get into what you're supposed to be talking about.
I think the problem that I fell into is like I started this company with the co-founders or with the whole team, the founding team, back in September. So we're already a year, year and a half into working from home remote culture. So it was just like, all right, everyone joins the meeting, mute. So then, like, it's like, that's just the norm. Okay, we're done with the meeting. Yeah. Bye, guys. And they just leave. I'm like, oh.
That's true. Like, if you don't have that personal relationship of seeing them in the office and, like, joking around and all of that. Yeah. If you're only remote, it's hard to build that relationship.
Yeah.
But that's why, like, my team, I kind of joined during COVID. And we've kind of done, like, I think maybe 2 or 3 virtual and in-person, like, hangouts. And I think it's done some work because, like, now I'll join stand-up, my man, you know, like, everyone's not there, and I'll kind of jokingly ask someone, like, hey, I saw you took this day off. Are you waiting to play this video game? Because I took the same day off, and that's why I took the day off. So, like, so, well, you know, any bit helps.
Did he take that time off for the video game? We talked about this
before. Yeah, we're playing Elden Ring the same day, end of February. So I can't do anything if you ask.
But if you didn't have that in-person sort of bullshit time, like you would have never probably discussed
true.
So.
Yeah. So I guess it depends on, like, if you have that time set apart. So that you do have the time to, like, BS with team members.
Yeah, I mean, we still have it on our calendar, but when COVID started, every Friday we had, like, an hour for basically virtual happy hour where everybody would join and everybody would have a drink. And, you know, it started out as everybody would pressure you, like, oh, where's your drink? Where's your drink? Like, to kind of loosen everybody up. And then it started to be a little bit more casual and new people started and, like, we got them into the meeting and it came to be, like, a way for new hires to just get to know everybody else outside of a meeting because, like, we still didn't do very many in-person activities and things like that.
Yeah, that was a nice thing about Vision, the company I was at before Balance, which was not too long ago. They were remote first also, but they made it a point to make it very friendly. Like, honestly, it felt like I worked with them. I actually really liked working there, like working with the people. But it felt very much like I knew them for 2 or 3. Like, I worked with them in person, and then we went remote.
Yeah.
It was weird. Like, they would send people drinks and things like that to kind of have, like, a happy hour. It was small. It was, like, maybe, like, 10 people, so...
But I think, like, once a sprint, that could actually, like, benefit a team.
Yeah.
Just, like, 1 hour before retro or after retro, whatever. Like, don't talk about work. Just have a drink, relax, talk to each other about whatever you can. It kind of helps, like, team building. 'Cause my team, I have rarely met these people in person, but... Every time we have, like, some interaction where it's not, let's talk about business, it goes a long way because you learn some little detail about each other and, you know, you could bring it up later on or you realize, like, oh, we have this in common. I can bring this up, but we can talk about it.
I actually like that a lot. A drink before retro. That's a nice little thing. I'm going to keep that for whenever I build my team out.
There you go. You just have to do your retros late enough in the day that it's not weird.
Socially acceptable to be drinking.
Look, it's okay.
Did you not listen? We are a little depressed about working from home, so I think we could drink at 10 a.m.
As long as someone's working after 12 noon, it's okay.
All right, so you mentioned sprints. You mentioned retros. I'm curious, what the heck are these things?
I'm glad you asked, Joe. This is Story Points. It's a show where we tell stories that point to different topics in software engineering. My name is Roger King, and I am founding engineer at Balanced.
I'm Joe Masseri, senior infrastructure engineer at SeatGeek.
And I am George Margantonis, front-end engineer at Capsule.
Thank you for listening, everyone. And this is our very first episode of this podcast.
Woo!
This episode is going to be about getting started in software engineering if you've ever been interested in programming or just had a curiosity of what it's all about. We're going to talk about kind of a few different topics here today. How do you get into it? Kind of what qualities we think we've seen in great engineers, and what else is there besides software engineering? What can you do kind of with this skill set? So I guess, Joe, if you don't mind starting, just tell us a little bit about how you got started, what kind of got you interested in programming.
Yeah, sure. So way back when we were in high school, I took a robotics class, which was a little bit of programming, a little bit of reading, and just not knowing what the heck I was doing. A lot of what we did was just copy code right out of a textbook and put it into our editor and then push play and kind of let it run. And I know that sounds sort of very boring and not really interesting at all, but that kind of was the only class in high school that I was like, this is cool. So, I mean, it was a robotics class. So going from there, I ended up majoring in computer engineering. Computer engineering is a little bit different from software engineering, where it's more hands-on and you kind of work more with the hardware layer of things. So think circuit boards and like actually programming your chips that are on your boards. So it's a little bit, it's a lower level programming. So I graduated from that, computer engineering, and surprisingly did not get a job in computer engineering at all. It was more of a sort of IT position, kind of support for the office, kind of also reading meters in my spare time. So it was sort of a catch-all sort of technology position at this very small startup, maybe 15 to 20 people, but that got me in the door, basically. I was writing some batch scripts. I was managing servers. We had two servers in AWS that I logged into. You know, that was like my first introduction to the cloud. And then from there, got an actual DevOps, I'm going to put that in quotes, position at a company called Zillion. That was a healthcare company. And that's where I really started getting into infrastructure and more software engineering, like real software engineering, as opposed to, you know, the computer engineering skills that I learned in school. And then from there, started out at SeatGeek and have been working there for the past couple of years.
George? So during my time in college, I realized I have no idea what I want to do. So I took some programming classes, we did in C++. But ultimately, I ended up working at an Apple store, realized, hey, you know what? I can make more money working than going to school. So I chose to work retail day to day. But since then, I ended up shifting from like working at the Genius Bar at an Apple store to doing IT to doing more like application support to ultimately kind of being at a startup where I could say like, hey, I could assist in, you know, the sales team working on whatever demos. So I could edit whatever HTML code they needed. And I ultimately ended up switching to one of the front end teams there. And since then, I've kind of realized, like, okay, I need to shift my focus. I need to focus on building as much JavaScript skill as I can. And I am currently working at Capsule as a front-end engineer. So far, so good. I'm kind of like the only front-end engineer on the team currently. And
well, you're doing back-end too, but really, yeah.
You know, I mean, kind
full
of
stack.
Whatever's
whatever they need.
Needed. But
I mean, that's how a lot of software engineering kind positions of are, actually, right? Yeah. Start out as one thing and it kind of...
I'm kind of hoping someone else on the team will take that one Java ticket I have. But yeah, sure. Whatever's needed.
Yeah. And so for me, as most of you listening would know, I've met these two at different points of my life. I met Joe way back in kindergarten, and George I met back when I worked at the Apple Store. But unlike Joe, I did not take that robotics class in high school. For me, it was just I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was in college. So I took one class in computer science. It turned out I really enjoyed it. I liked kind of understanding all these things that I didn't understand. So like, how was a website built? How was an application built? And as you guys know, I've always been more of an idea person, always thinking of different ideas, always wondering how is something built, and then like, oh, how can I do that? So then I just kind of took that leap of faith and just went into computer science in college. I worked at the Apple Store also, and I decided, yeah, this isn't working out. So I got my first job as a web developer, and then from there, my curiosity kind of brought me to where I am today of just how are applications built? How are they launched? How are they supported? You know, what's the business side of it? And luckily, I found my way into I would say somewhat of a dream job of like being a founding engineer, but, you know, still have that dream of making a startup one day. So yeah, you know, we talked about how we got into programming and how we kind of broke into the industry. Lately, I'm sure you guys have seen these different ads, maybe different, you know, TikTok posts, social media posts of saying, hey, are you tired of your 9-to-5 job? Well, mm-hmm. you can make 6 figures being in a tech role. So come join and get into DevOps or software engineering. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sparked this interest of me kind of building this podcast with you two, because I think at some point we have all been approached by people of like, hey, how do I get into software engineering? I love computers, or I love tech.
Yep,
and
yep.
I can honestly tell you, I couldn't build a great gaming computer for the life of me, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference between being into tech and then being into programming.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because that's such like a common misconception, especially like with older people. I don't want to like call anybody out, but like, you know, you always hear those parents who are like, oh, my kid really enjoys computers. Like, you know.
Yeah. One of my favorites is honestly when I'm talking to a recruiter back in the day when I was actually interviewing, and they'll say, so what do you like to do in your spare time? You like to play video games? I'm like, no, I actually don't like to play video games. Like, I find that really boring.
Yeah. But I actually, it's funny you mention that, because I think also video games, like people associate video games with computers
yes.
and like software.
Yeah,
so it's
definitely.
Like, oh, you like video games? Like, you can get into computers, no problem. Like,
mm-hmm.
get into computers, right? Like, it's completely different when you're actually like sitting down at your laptop, like writing code is like,
yeah,
you know, it's different than what most people would picture in their head, I think.
Yeah. You talked about getting into computers, right? There are different ways of people getting an interest of building their own PC, whether it's from, you know, they want to play this like super greedy video game that takes up a lot of resources, or you know, they need video editing or any kind of like editing computer, something that does mm-hmm. makes content. But how can people kind of get into programming?
I've recently talked to my cousin-in-law who is interested in, you know, breaking into the industry. He recently went through a boot camp, kind of sponsored by a pretty big company. But yeah, I mean, I spoke to him. I asked him a few like kind of interview focused questions, and I realized like, yeah, he kind of has that like basic knowledge, but it's almost like he doesn't know how to take that and apply it to something different than the specific question he's been asked. So there were some instances where like I would ask him a question, we would talk it through, and you know, I would ask him first like, if someone asks you this question, you know, what would you ask first? What would you ask later? What would...
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that because I feel like that's actually a lot. That's a big topic. That's a big question that a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. And it's not just people who come from coding boot camps. Yeah. I think it's just... I know I certainly had that question when I was getting, like, when I graduated college, I had the degree, right? Mm-hmm. You would think school would prepare me for it. But it's like, great, how do I apply all this stuff I learned in 4 years to my job? And, in my opinion, internships are not what they are today. Like, definitely not what it was.
But it depends on the company,
that's
right?
That's true, yeah. I went to, like, a tiny-ass startup, maybe, like, 5 people, I remember. It was no bigger than this room right now that we're in, which is not very big.
Nope.
And it shared...
We're all sharing a table right now.
Yeah. It shared a hallway with a lingerie startup, and that's the only thing I could tell you about that experience. So, but it's definitely something that I think even people who go to school who have a proper education in it, and people who are super smart, it's like, how do you apply kind of what you learned to the job? Like, how do you take that and, like, problem solve? And I think that's a huge quality. And we can touch more on that later of, like, a quality of software engineers.
Yeah. But, like, touching on that a little bit, I think it does depend on the company that you do your internship with, right? Because, like you said, you were sitting in a room that was the size of this bedroom that we're in right now, or office.
Hey, yeah, this is my office. I work from home, okay?
Yeah, we're in this office, right? And I had a similar internship experience where I worked at this company that was, I think the amount of software engineers that we had was probably like 10, and we all sat in one corner of the office. And I was there for maybe 8 months, and I didn't really write any code. I mean, I was dealing with code all day, but it was like fixing errors, recompiling, and just like touching code. But I wasn't building anything that made an impact to the company. But I would say that you could definitely get an internship where you jump on the job and you're building code and you're pushing code to production within 1 or 2 weeks, right? So like, at SeatGeek, we hire interns every quarter or whatever it is, and they're onboarded and they're just as involved as a regular engineer. Like, we don't treat them any differently, and they're just as responsible for their code that they push as anybody else, basically. So you do kind of get that experience in some.
Yeah. The engineer that I spoke to and was kind of like prepping definitely had less experience. It was kind of like a, hey, you're brand new to this, go through this like few week boot camp that we have, and then you might be able to join us as a software engineer. And based off that boot camp, I was talking to them constantly, like week after week, and I kind of realized, like, yeah, everything they said was kind of it was like, yes, you understand like the fundamentals, but you don't understand how to apply that in different scenarios. And when I started asking specific like interview questions, like I literally just copy pasted off leak code, I realized, yes, they understand like what this is, but they don't understand why or how can I take this and apply it in different scenarios. Which I think is kind of like the biggest weakness of something like a programming bootcamp.
But I think that's similar. Something that you have to sort of keep in mind as like you go to a bootcamp. I feel like you can't expect to come out 10 weeks later and just be this fully functioning software engineer. Yeah. Like you have to expect to hit some bumps in the road and kind of, so you have to not have that attitude of, I went to a boot camp, I know what I'm doing. Like you have to be open-minded and ready to continue learning and applying everything you just learned. And like you have to, it's time to apply that stuff.
Yeah. And I think like I think it's easier said than done, obviously. Saying like, hey, just apply what you learned. For me,
yeah, I mean,
For me, it was a lot of like little, and what I love to say is like aha moments, where it's just like, I'll just be, I don't know, brushing my teeth, and I just decide, I'm just like, oh crap, that's what they meant. Like way back, that's what they were talking about. Or, oh wait, I can apply what I learned here to this scenario. And it's a normal thing to not understand, like taking in any field, not just programming, just any field, like what am I doing with what I learned? Just programming, I think, is a little more abstract.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
But that's why I think if you're able to, the best case scenario is you go through some sort of boot camp and you apply to a company where you can clearly say, I just graduated from X boot camp. These are my skills. I need some kind of mentor of some sort, and they can provide you with that. If they can't, you know, you might want to reconsider, but best case scenario, you come out of a boot camp, you find some kind of mentor that can kind of has the time that says, okay, these are your skills. Here's an application. Build upon that using what you know. And they have the time to like correct you and build you up on your skills. Because otherwise, it's kind of like if you get hired without a mentor, you're kind of just, you know, doing whatever you think you know, and you might be building upon like bad practices.
Yeah, I think it's a good point for sure. And I think it applies to not just anybody in boot camps, any boot camp graduates. It applies to any junior engineer, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think I was fortunate enough to have a good mentor at my first job of, hey, this is a, like, pointing out this is bad. Okay, now this is a good thing to learn. This is good practices. But we need to suffer with the bad. So you kind of feel that, like, you know, I think we definitely grew in that kind of time frame of being engineers, where it's like, suffer with it so you know not to make that mistake again.
Yeah, but I feel like that's just part of
being
a software engineer. Is like, you always have an idea, right, of how to do something. But there's always somebody who has a better way of doing it. So like being open to accept that, hey, it works, but here is a better way, and like just iterating on your own approach.
Or even like what a manager, what Brian taught me at Compass, it's like mentoring the junior engineers. They propose a certain way, and I'm like, well, no, this isn't the best way we should do it. And he just says, listen, you have to let them kind of drown a little bit, where like to your point of like, interns, they push code at your company and they suffer from that code, right? They're pushing code and then they see it in production.
You cause an outage.
Yeah. You're kind of dealing with it. And it's a scary thought, but it also teaches them, it's like, oh, I should be a little more open-minded, right? Which is a quality of an engineer. You have to be open-minded, as well as like, oh, it's a learning moment for them of like, maybe I shouldn't have done it that way.
Right.
I'm not going to make that mistake again.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about like coding boot camps. And just to kind of wrap up on that topic there, coding boot camps, I think, are great. Like, I personally think they're great. I have worked with a few people who came from coding boot camps, and they're phenomenal engineers now. They're senior engineers at big companies. I just think a lot of the media, and I don't blame media and their advertising and marketing team, of them expecting you that you're going to make this crazy software engineering salary that, you know, a lot of people hear about, especially when you work in tech. But that, don't expect working at Google. You know, you got to kind of have to work your ladder, like your way up the ladder, so to speak. You know, you might find yourself at a smaller startup, or you might find yourself at a mid-sized startup. But enjoy those moments, because you can learn a lot from there. And I think we all definitely learned a lot at being at a small startup.
Yeah. I mean, like, to that point, like, you can't just expect to come out of the boot camp and hit the ground and like,
yeah, I'm going to go work at Google, Apple.
Right. No, like, no. You still have to put in your time. Like, this, it speeds you up, but also you're not fully there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So yeah, we talked about coding boot camps, kind of that is a great way for people who are kind of already in a career and they want to kind of switch it up. But I think there's another way that we should talk about, and that's definitely one way that you took, George, of, kind of, you were an application support engineer at a company, And then you found your way into the software engineering or programming department. How did you find that transition?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it was, I mean, mine was definitely unique where I started going to school as I started working and I realized, hey, why go to school when you can just work and make more money? But at a certain point, I realized, like, yes, software engineering is like the way to go. But by then I had kind of like stopped going to any classes that I took and I was like full force. Hey, I'm going to be a kind of application support engineer, system support, network support engineer. And I was working at like pretty high class, client in New York City. And I realized, like, you know, there's more to this than just what I'm exposed to right now. I could be building these applications. And
so what kind of made you make that jump, right? Because we see that a lot, especially when we worked at Apple together. We mm-hmm. both worked at the Genius Bar. Yeah. We kept getting told by people like, hey, you can do the same thing at Bloomberg, or you can be a consultant, an IT consultant, and just go to houses and mm-hmm. help people with their iPhones and make double the salary that you're making at Apple. But kind of like, what was that tipping point for you? Because I know for me personally, it was just like, this is boring. Like, there's more, I am way more interested in like how the iPhone is built, how an app is built on the phone, than I am like supporting this device.
I mean, honestly, I think it was less how to support this device and more I don't want to support this device per person. And I want to support this device per application. I want to support this device per company. Yeah, so instead
at a deeper
of,
level.
Yeah, instead of per person, I want to elevate my skills so that I can start supporting things per application. So I, instead of, you know, working, going person to person, I can just go straight to the manufacturer of the application and say, I'm going to work for you. I'm going to support your application. I'm going to be able to troubleshoot whatever, because I have these skills of working with whatever consumers. And I think that's what ultimately got my first job as like a, I guess, application support engineer, where I started troubleshooting, yeah, like day-to-day things. There were a team of other engineers that did the same job, and I was kind of like overseeing them. So little by little, I kind of learned what they did, learned what like the common issues were, learned how to troubleshoot them, and kind of elevated that I could say, like, yeah, these are the common issues, please fix these things. And, you know, instead of solving a case by case basis, you're kind of solving real world, like, bigger problems so that the engineers have an easier time. Instead of solving issue by issue, they're solving like larger issue by larger issue so that it kind of smooths over whatever the support team has to deal with.
Yeah. So you worked application support at Zillion, where Joe and I worked. We all worked together at Zillion.
Yeah.
And you talked about being able to troubleshoot and making the lives of the engineers a little bit easier. But how did you kind of make that transition? I remember back then, one of the things that you used to do is just kind of like learn from each ticket, so to speak, where like, hey, there was this bug. Oh, but hey, how did you fix that bug? Like,
I think that was one of the things that sort of helped you out in the long run. Was the office was 40, 50 people, and you had product design, you had all like a bunch of the engineers, you had support. Everybody was sort of in the office 5 feet away from each other, right? So, like, to your point, how did you go from I have a support issue and how did I fix that? You had access to the engineers and like the people who are actually making those fixes to kind of lead you to water almost and see how that was done.
Yeah.
So did that help you, like, sort of gain that curiosity of, all right, I'm in support now, and mm-hmm. would I rather be support or would I rather be the guy fixing it?
Yeah, that definitely had a part of it. Being able to see the engineers work on it and realize, like, oh, you know, they're only making very minor changes on their part, but resolving a bunch of changes on our part, you know, maybe I should kind of like take interest, pay attention to whatever they're doing. It little by little ended up as like me learning kind of front end, like, oh, you know, when they click X button, this happens. When they click this other button, this happens. So little by little, I very quickly realized, like, hey, learning this goes a long way, a long, long way in terms of troubleshooting. So
yeah, and I can tell you, as one of the engineers who would, you know, work on some of those tickets, I definitely didn't want to work on like simple bugs.
Yeah,
like, someone else could do this.
Exactly.
And I'm not trying to discredit your curiosity or the mm-hmm. work you did, but it helped having a friend in there, because I could just be like,
yes,
hey, I'm gonna show you how to fix this, you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
And I think it honestly, it doesn't even just go to having a friend. It's like, hey, just network, talk to people.
Yeah.
Definitely. We're normal people too.
But if I didn't have you, I wouldn't be where I am now, because I needed someone to say, hey, you could just learn how to do this. You could just learn how this works, and you could fix whatever issues on your own. So you kind of like gave me the ability to figure out how to resolve issues on my own. I then took that and taught that to the rest of the team, but you kind of started that, like, hey, you're curious about X, I can teach you X, and then you can resolve Y. So the more you learn, the more you can solve.
And I think it definitely falls under a quality of engineers. Yeah. And we'll definitely wrap up on this later, of, but you did teach the other application support people, but they didn't have that curiosity that you did. Yes. They were just like, no, we're good, just trying to replicate, which is perfectly fine,
right?
If you want to do that. But if you want that hunger, or if you have that hunger to be an engineer, you have to have that curiosity.
Yeah.
And just, as kind of bad as it sounds, like, be that annoying kid that just always mm-hmm. asks why. Like, why, why?
Because I didn't have that curiosity to begin with. I just thought, like, I'm application support, I'm going to do my job, answer whatever questions, and that's it. But after a while of, you know, talking to the engineers and figuring out, oh, this is the root cause, let me pass this on to application support, you kind of realize, like, oh, if only there was someone that could bridge that application support and, like, engineering support, you could resolve so many issues without, you know, getting so many people involved. So I think that's kind of how I, like, switched from application support to just being a part of the front-end engineering team.
Yeah, and I think it you definitely see that a lot at the bigger companies, right? I think we worked with someone who left Compass. That's where George and I worked together. We worked at Compass together, and there was a person on the application support team who left Compass to go to Netflix. He mm-hmm. went to a coding boot camp, actually. He learned the basics of programming. He ended up doing application support, which gave him a great kind of background, or kind mm-hmm. of introduction of, like, how was an app built to the scale of Compass's app.
Yeah.
And then now he's doing application support at mm-hmm. a big company, and he's doing application support. It's different than other companies, but he has to work with JavaScript. He has to understand how JavaScript works. And I think that's just the evolution of application support, definitely now, but I think in the future, you're going to see different levels to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there are, like we said, multiple ways of getting into programming or software engineering. I keep saying programming, and I honestly hate that term. Yeah. I don't know why I keep saying it. I think it's just easy to say.
I say the same thing.
Yeah. It's like when we're talking to people not in the field, it's just easier to say programming.
Yeah. It's a more common term, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, there is the common way, like anybody else gets into a field of going to school. So Joe and I both went to school for, well, mm-hmm. he went to school for computer engineering. I went to school for computer science. But I think it's important there to kind of touch on, Joe went to school for computer engineering, which is completely different than computer science, but we are still in the same field. So Joe, if you don't mind, just kind of like talking about computer engineering, kind of the school you went to, and this the different, multiple different fields that there are and kind of majors that there are at RIT. Oh, I just spoiled that.
Oops. Yeah, so I went to RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology. Yeah, so, I mean, for me, when I was making the decision of what should my major be, we had computer science, we had regular computer engineering. Actually, my major was computer engineering technology, which was a more hands-on approach to computer engineering. So computer engineering straight up was more theoretical. It was more, you know, you read the book, you did the math, the science behind it, where computer engineering technology had basically a lab aspect for every class. And you,
so it was like a much more hands-on.
Yeah, right? Like you would learn something and then you would have a lab at the end of the week applying that exact thing. So it was a lot easier for me to say, oh, I learned this thing and now I'm going to go and test it out and see how that works and all that.
I don't want to cut your story off, but so what was the difference between computer engineering and computer science then?
So the difference there is the hardware software aspect. So computer science is more application development. You're writing software, where computer engineering is more the lower level. You're programming the chips, you're programming the circuit boards, you're working with electrical engineers to kind of design something at the hardware level, as opposed to software that runs on a computer or on a server somewhere.
Yeah, I remember when we were in college together, and so I went to SUNY Purchase. I solely went to school knowing I just wanted to play tennis in college, and I was like, this is close to home. I don't want to go away. I mean, at the time, I didn't feel like I wanted to go away, and I just wanted to keep playing tennis because that's all I kind of knew,
yeah.
And I fell into computer science, but we talked about it of there is this field called new media. And if for many of you who might not know, SUNY Purchase is an art school. It's very much more like towards art, music majors than it is like a technical school like RIT. But the biggest new thing was new media. And I remember telling you, I was like, dude, new media is so cool. It's like you kind of work with technology, but like you kind of bring like the art aspect to things and like things like sculpture. With that said, what's the difference between that and computer engineering at that point? Because to me, when we did, I took a new media class. We worked with circuit boards. We worked with kind of using cameras and sensors to have art be more interactive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it's a much higher level being in new media. Like computer engineering, you are actually programming how the chip works on a circuit board, right? You're saying, if I get a signal on this pin, then I'm going to take this action, which is basically how a CPU works, right? You have a bunch of ones and zeros, and it says, if it's a one, do this. If it's a zero, do this. So you're basically programming the chip to do that sort of analysis of, if this switch gets flipped on, all right, now I'm going to power up the board and I'm going to run all this like firmware software that runs on the chip, as opposed to something like new media where you're probably using something that's already programmed to get your desired outcome.
Yeah. I just think it's cool to kind of bring up different, like there are so many different kind of fields, majors that you can take to get that are technical.
But I think like that's just a product of the day an age that we're in, where it's like everything is becoming more technical, right? So as you're going, like eventually everything is going to have that technology component where you're messing with some new tool to accomplish.
Yeah, I remember one job I almost got. They work with, it was a consulting company that worked with Nike, with Red Bull, all these big companies, like media companies, and you were responsible for building and programming the sculptures that were like in Times Square, right? Like if Nike decides to have a sculpture that has a shoe that lights up multiple colors, you'd be I was like, oh, that's so cool.
But like you're applying the technology that's available as opposed to like actually writing that software that will light up the LEDs in whatever sequence, or you know, you push this button, it does one sequence, you push another button, it does some other sequence. So like that's sort of the distinction.
Yeah. So with RIT being a technical school, they have many fields. I know I texted this to you, but I'm going to bring it up here on the podcast. Yeah. So my wife's brother goes to RIT for computer engineering, same field that Joe actually majored in. But he told me that there is actually a difference between computer science and there's a major called computer or software engineering. I had no idea that that was an even thing because when you look at most job posts, they ask degree in computer science.
Yeah, or computer science or other related.
Other related, so what's the difference? Like, I was like, what? This is weird.
I mean, I think at this point, it doesn't really matter. It kind of falls back to the position that you want to take. Like, if you have, like, you're going to be programming in both majors, right? Like,
yeah.
It just depends on the language you're using, right? Like when I introed in computer engineering, it was a lot of C++ and like the lower level programming languages. But once you know the concepts, it doesn't matter. It's just the syntax.
So
from
it
there,
comes
right?
back to how you're applying what you learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
We definitely are in this I would like to say like a golden age, right? Where like at the current time, like people, recruiters especially, and managers are not too they're very impressed that like for me when I interview, I just say like, yeah, I can learn any language. Just tell me what you want to use and I'll learn it. Because I definitely don't
feel... It's the same pattern over and over again, just doing it a different way.
Exactly. Like, I don't feel a difference in, like, Python versus JavaScript versus Java. It's definitely, I have preferences in languages I want to use because they're more friendly, they're just easier to work with, or they're just better tool for the job.
Right. And I think that's an important thing, too, right? Like, you can know a specific language, but if it's not the right tool for the job, you're... kind of like trying to wedge a square, what's the saying, like a square wedge in a hole, whatever that fun saying is. Like, you have to be able to adapt.
But Joe, you're a hardware engineer, what happened?
but that's what I'm saying, right? You have to like be able to adapt and learn, because software engineering is moving so quickly that you have to be able to say, all right, what's the next big thing, let me apply what I already know to the new thing and get going.
And definitely with technology kind of growing and it's just taking over a lot of different industries, you know, you don't necessarily have to major or study computer science. I kind of misphrased that, but you don't have to major in computer science or a computer science related field. You can go into something like accounting or finance. I know a few people who did that. They went into business because they felt that they can learn quote unquote IT related skills. he learned these IT skills. This is again like 10 years ago. But he ended up doing infrastructure work. He's a great DevOps engineer. I hate that phrase, but we can talk about that in another episode.
Yeah.
But you know, if you kind of see that trend that technology is taking over, you can learn a different field and kind of master finance. And kind of take your curiosity of technology, learn it on your own spare time, and then get into a company that does finance, like a Bloomberg. That's what my cousin did, actually.
Yeah.
He worked at Bloomberg as a financial analyst, and then now he's a programmer because he had that interest, and he just kept talking to people.
Well, I think that's the important thing, right? Like, you have the interest, and you have that, like, mentality of, I can figure this out, where there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of good engineers who went to school for literature or like something else that they were really interested in.
That's my favorite. I'm like, you were interested in how to compose a song, and then now you're
building the most intricate. Like,
they translate.
Yeah,
like, it's like all your state of mind of like being the curiosity and just like wanting to learn and figure out how everything works together.
Yeah, and that's definitely a great quality of a good software engineer. I think it's definitely just like you just keep learning. And I think the day, I don't want this to take it out of context.
I know you're about to say, but go ahead.
The day you stop having that urge to learn is kind of when I think software engineering as a, what they call in our field, an individual contributor, it kind of, you're seeing the end of that, right?
Yeah, but there's so many other positions within the software technology world that you can go into at that point, right?
Yeah, there's becoming an engineering manager. Engineering managers, for those of you who don't know, at certain companies, depending on the size, they're actually more like people managers. So how do you elevate your team and then your team members to be the best software engineers that they can be? Teaching them the things that you learned kind of going throughout your career to become a manager, or how do you kind of give them those soft skills that a lot of people don't talk about, which I actually think this is a great time for us to talk about, are the soft skills of software engineers.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, though, because I was actually having a conversation with one of my good friends the other day who's a software engineer, and he had the opportunity to become a manager of his team. His manager left. He, you know, the position was open, and he was going back and forth. He didn't know if he should take it, or if he, like, he got offered the job. He didn't know if he should take it or he should continue being an individual contributor. And basically it came down to, do I want to write the code, or do I want to be the guy who's in meetings and then like relaying what needs to be done and kind of, you know, just making sure that the team is doing the right thing. So as you move on in your career, it's a natural stepping stone to say, hey, do I want to continue writing code, or do I want to take that next step and kind of lead others?
Yeah, and it's definitely okay if you want to keep writing code. That was definitely like kind of where I fell in.
Yeah.
I mentioned before I worked at Compass. I was a tech lead. I was writing code, but at the same time, like, I enjoyed mentoring, but I enjoyed building things more. And with talking to my managers, my two different managers that I had, it was like, all right, the next step that they wanted for me was to be an engineer, like an engineering manager for the greater org that I was part of. And I was like, I don't really want to do that.
I mean, if you still want to contribute, like, that's just do that.
And I was like, oh, it was great news to me. I was like, wow, I made it. I was like, I made it. Like, all right, engineering manager, that's kind of what you think is the next step, right? And I was just
Well, actually,
like,
I think it's a lateral move if you're like a senior engineer and you go to engineering manager.
Yeah, I think it actually is you're right. I think it actually is a lateral move. And that's just kind of the cool thing about, I think, engineering orgs as a whole at different companies, right? Like, you see, let's take accounting, for example. You have a senior accountant, but then they become an accounting manager. That is a promotion.
Yeah.
But in our field, it's not. It's a lateral move if you're a senior engineer to an engineering manager. And I think that's cool because it's like you're not – it's almost like the respect is there, if that makes sense, where it's like, as a senior engineer, you're not like, hey, just because you're my manager doesn't mean...
Right.
Like, yeah. You're not telling me
your voice
to
matters in the room, true. Right? Engineering manager, application support, what else do we have? Like, if you don't want to be an actual software engineer, what else can you do at a tech company?
Yeah. I know for someone like me, I'm very much an idea person. I really like thinking of different features and different app ideas. You know, I kind of do it just walking around with the dogs, right? I'll just think of an app idea. I'll text you guys, and then sometimes that's the thing, or I'll end up trying to build it. But you know, there's a role called a product manager, right? Yeah. And in my opinion, the best product managers are technical product managers, which that's a whole nother story to talk about of what is a technical product manager, because that's an actual role at companies. Mm-hmm. But a product manager and using your skills as a software engineer, just understanding the complexity and what it takes to build software and the product together, it's that's something that's needed. It goes hand in hand for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. And definitely recently we hired a few individuals to be part of the like application support department, where their job is purely troubleshoot whatever issues our pharmacists have and, you know, resolve that or relay those issues to engineering. So it's kind of like, yeah, you know how things work. You understand the concept of how things work, how like whatever services communicate with each other. You know how to like call whatever requests that are causing whatever issues, but ultimately like you don't go further than that. It's kind of just, I know how things talk to each other, but past that, I pass it off to whatever engineer that owns that. So
yeah, you're sort of like a first level support of like figuring out what the actual bug is.
Yeah, exactly. So we are hiring like actively for that kind of role. So
this guy's trying to plug for Capsule right now.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's interested, like shout out.
So we're talking about support.
Yeah.
After the code is out and figuring out the bugs. Mm-hmm. But what about something like QA, which goes before you ship the code? I mean, like some companies don't do QA at all.
I mean,
it's a lot of times it's on the developer to push their code to QA it, make sure it's fine. But I mean, a lot of companies, it is a dedicated role.
So at our company, from what I've seen, it's literally just whatever engineer is working on the front end and cares to write front end code, kudos to them. Whatever engineer doesn't write whatever front end tests, that's on them. But for the most part, yeah, like we do, we try to get like the basic Jest Cypress tests in wherever possible. We try to have our own like build pipeline where if your Cypress test fails, the PR won't be ready for review. But yeah, like not everyone follows that. And it's kind of like a work in progress. We're trying to make that a standard throughout the company. But not everyone follows that.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked a lot about front end, back end. You know, there's different dimensions and responsibilities of software engineers. It's not just what a lot of people see today. And I think when people say, hey, I want to be a software engineer, they just think, I want to build this cool app, right? I want to build this cool website that does, I want to build the new Facebook or the new Reddit, or I want to build the new, you know, Coinbase or some new application. There's a lot of different layers to an application and how it's built. And we can definitely talk a lot more about that, but I think that will take hours. But to kind of sum it up, right, there's front end, there's back end, there is infrastructure, or what a lot of companies like to call DevOps. There's security.
Yeah, security is a big one.
Data analysts, there's data engineers, and not to overwhelm anyone, but if you have interest in any of those fields, you know, it's something that you can get into.
Yeah. It's not just writing code. Like there's so many things you could do with writing code that there's so many doors.
I can tell you one of the reasons why I worked at Apple for a year after I graduated was because, like, I don't want to write code. I was like, I can't imagine myself sitting at a desk 9 to 5, but I mean, here I am now, yeah. 10 years later, writing code all day. But it's just the curiosity. If you have that curiosity to understand how something is built or want to learn something, you know, I think it translates to almost any field, right? If you have the curiosity for something, you'll do great in it. So thanks for listening to the show. I hope you guys enjoyed everything that we talked about here. We're going to try to release at least a new episode every week or so. I hope it kind of helps inform people who are interested in programming, who are already in the field, or who are kind of like stuck in that kind of mid to senior role, trying to kind of progress, kind of figure out where they want to go. So again, thanks for listening. Please subscribe, comment, like, and all those things. I will say it right now. John Cena is going to be a bigger actor, movie star, than The Rock.
It's a bold statement.
I don't know. I have no faith in John Cena after he... I thought he was going to be a big star. Apparently, he fucked up some things. Apparently, he tried to, like, get into Marvel, and they turned him down a few times. But I will admit...
So he went to DC?
After rewatching...
He can't get into Marvel, that's it? He's just... He's gone?
Hey, that's a big thing. After rewatching Suicide Squad and seeing that bulge, for the folks at home, they can't see it, but I'm doing the okay with my hand.
So the first three episodes.
He's fucking packing.
Granted, he